It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. The verdict is in. The U.S. jury Wednesday convicted Chechen immigrant Dzhokhar Tsarnaev of his part in carrying out the 2013 Boston Marathon bombings. The attack by Dzhokhar and his brother Tamerlan killed three people and wounded 264. The jury deliberated for more than 11 hours before convicting Tsarnaev of all 30 charges against him. 17 of those charges carry a possible death penalty. But Boston City Councilor-at-Large Stephen John Murphy hopes Tsarnaev is not put to death.
The penalty phase coming up is where we're going to have the action, I guess, whether or not he gets the death penalty, which in normal circumstances I believe he should get the death penalty. But because it's a badge of honor for radical Islam, I don't think he should. I think he should rot in jail here.
Stephen John Murphy, a state-run media outlet in Iran, is reporting that Iranian Navy ships are moving toward a site near Yemen. We get more from Jeff Selden.
Gunshots ring out in the Yemeni capital of Sana'a following another airstrike by Saudi-led forces, benefiting now from daily refueling sorties by U.S. tanker aircraft. More U.S.-made bombs and guidance kits will also soon be on the way. Yet making the situation perhaps more perilous, reports from Iranian state-run media that Tehran's sending a naval destroyer and another vessel for exercises in the waters off Yemen.
We certainly keep a close eye on all the naval activities in that region.
Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren refused to comment directly on the Iranian ships, but added Iran's links to Yemen's Houthi rebels are well known. Jeff Selden, The Pentagon.
A former prisoner of the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay has been arrested in Uganda on suspicion of playing a role in killing a prosecutor who handled terrorist cases. This is VOA News. Rwanda's attorney general wants to know how the French government will go about releasing declassified documents related to the 1994 Rwandan genocide. Busingye Johnston said his government has asked its diplomatic representative in France to learn the French government's plans. Wire services reported that a decision to declassify the papers was signed on Tuesday. Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras met with Russian President Vladimir Putin for talks in Moscow Wednesday. During the meeting in the Kremlin, Mr. Putin indicated Russia could lift its embargo on food imports from Greece. Speaking to reporters after the meeting, the Russian president said that the leader of Greece did not ask for financial aid. Mr. Putin said he and Greece's prime minister had discussed Greece's possible participation in the Turkish Stream pipeline project. A white police officer in the southeastern U.S. state of South Carolina has been dismissed after a video showed him shooting and killing a fleeing black man after a traffic stop. Officer Michael Slager was fired and accused of murder in the killing last Saturday of 50-year-old Walter Scott. Scott had been pulled over for driving with a broken brake light. Anthony Scott is the brother of the slain man.
It's going to be a long time before we get over this, because just like me and my brother, he's the middle guy. He's the middle guy. He's been there. He's the nucleus. He was the nucleus.
A video taken by a bystander shows Slager firing 8 times at Scott. Kurdish security officials say the Islamic State group has freed at least 216 members of Iraq's Yazidi community who had been held captive for 8 months. Witnesses say the handover took place Wednesday in the province of Kirkuk, noting that most of the Yazidis were elderly and in poor health. The reason for the release was not clear. An Afghan National Army soldier opened fire on U.S. troops in Jalalabad Wednesday, killing one American before being killed in return fire. The gunfire erupted just after Afghan provincial officials met with a U.S. embassy official in the compound of the provincial governor in Jalalabad. It was the latest in a number of incidents in which Afghan troops have attacked U.S. or NATO forces fighting alongside them. The United Nations has launched an appeal for $111 million to help a large part of North Korea's population, which is now facing a shortage of food. UN Humanitarian Coordinator for North Korea, Ghulam Isaac Zai, says the funding will help 5 agencies provide food, water, and other basics for North Koreans. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. DRC's opposition protest and electoral calendar that excludes the country's youth.
According to the calendar announced by Electoral Commission President Abe Apollinaire Malumalu, the local elections this year will be based on lists of voters drawn up in 2011, and anyone not on those lists will not vote.
That's VOA correspondent Nick Long reporting from Goma. Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe visits South Africa. We'll have analysis. The State Department says it knows of no formal request from Kenya for U.S. assistance to fight Al-Shabaab. And Rwanda wants to know how France intends to release declassified documents relating to the 1994 genocide.
In our humble view, I think we prefer to wait and see what documents are declassified and how they have been declassified. We will obviously subject them to a bit of analysis.
Businge Johnston is Rwanda's Attorney General. Somali money transfer companies react to Kenyan government's decision to shut them down. A white U.S. policeman is charged with murder for killing an unarmed black man. And a simple and inexpensive drug is effective in treating hepatitis C. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An opposition party in the Democratic Republic of Congo is protesting an electoral calendar that it says will deny many young people the right to vote in local elections this year. Nick Long has more from Goma in eastern DRC.
Opposition parties in the DRC have been contesting the electoral process for months, with deadly consequences in January when, according to Human Rights Watch, at least 40 people were killed in street protests. The government denies that figure and has said about a dozen people died. Those protests led to the announcement of an electoral calendar, but now opposition activists are contesting the date set for local and provincial elections this year, which they say is too soon. They say logistics are not in place and many young voters would be excluded. Speaking at a public meeting on the streets of Goma, Christian Bados, a local spokesman for the Engagement for Citizenship and Democracy Party, or ECIDE, said the new calendar is unconstitutional.
Le calendrier est inconstitutionnel. Quand il y a eu le calendrier?
He says this is because the Constitution clearly states everyone over the age of 18 has the right to vote. According to the calendar announced by Electoral Commission President Abe Apollinaire Malumalu, the local elections this year will be based on lists of voters drawn up in 2011, and anyone not on those lists will not vote. As Bados points out, that excludes people who were under 18 in 2011 but are now between 18 and 22. He told the crowd that recently many young Congolese died for the right to vote. You exerted pressure in the streets between January the 19th and the 22nd, he tells the mainly young audience, and that it is possible many Congolese died in those protests. Bados suggested there is now a question over the figure of 40 victims cited by Human Rights Watch. He says there is now an inquiry about the bodies found at Maluku Cemetery near Kinshasa. Last Friday, the government announced that more than 400 bodies have been discovered in a mass grave at Maluku. The Deputy Prime Minister said these were bodies of the destitute and of children who died in infancy. The government has announced a judicial investigation into the circumstances surrounding the grave. The United Nations mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo has welcomed that announcement and says the UN Human Rights Office will accompany the investigation. The ECIDE meeting was stopped by police after about 10 minutes. I knew the police would come, says someone in the crowd. There were no arrests and no violence. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
A spokesman for the U.S. State Department says that she knows of no new formal request from the government of Kenya for U.S. assistance to fight the terrorist group Al-Shabaab. Kenyan Foreign Minister Amina Mohamed was quoted as saying that her government had asked for assistance from the U.S. and its European allies. Acting State Department spokesperson Marie Huff said the U.S. had been supportive of Kenya and the African peacekeeping force known as AMISOM.
We continue to provide training, material, and technical support to assist Kenya and other AMISOM troop contributing countries who are fighting alongside Somalia against al-Shabaab in Somalia. That's certainly part of the assistance we've been giving when it comes to al-Shabaab. And with Kenya, we've been in direct and frequent contact with them. We have worked closely with them on security matters, but I'm not sure if they've asked for more.
This question before, but does this building believe that Kenya has taken full advantage of the assistance provided to it by the Americans?
Well, I think a couple things. First, that there are frequent threats inside Kenya, many different threat streams that are reported that come in, I know, to the Kenyans. So this is clearly a very difficult challenge for them. I think it's probably no surprise that the security forces need to do better. I mean, I think that's just sort of a factual statement. That's why we're trying to work with them. I think in part, al-Shabaab has suffered some leadership losses over the last 3 months. And I think these kinds of sort of high casualty, in some ways low resource or lower resource attacks are a way they've tried to respond to some of those leadership losses and to sort of reassert themselves. And they certainly know the operating environment in Kenya very well. So we are working very closely with the Kenyans. They are resource constrained. Part of, I think, what needs to happen is to really, they have these resources that they try to match to shifting threats, and that is a challenge, right? And so we're helping them do that going forward, but it is a tough challenge.
That's Acting State Department spokesperson Marie Huff speaking Wednesday during the regular daily press briefing. Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren also said the Pentagon was not aware of any new request for assistance from Kenya, but he said the Pentagon had been providing assistance to the African Union peacekeeping troops in the form of training and equipment.
I think there's two components to our partnership and the way we work with the Kenyans. It's partnership and direct action. Under the partnership umbrella, we're giving pre-deployment support to African Union forces. We've supported the provision of mentors to work with the African Union in areas such as counter-IED, force protection, logistics. And we've given a fairly wide range of equipment to the AU forces. This includes armored personnel carriers, trucks, armored and unarmored ambulances, medical equipment, engineering equipment, and other items. The direct action stuff we talked a little bit about yesterday or the day before. I mean, we have done CT strikes against known al-Shabaab operatives. So, yes, we are working with the Kenyans. I'm not aware of any specific requests that the Kenyans have made in support of this recent tragedy, but we continue our support with all members of the African Union.
That's Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren speaking Wednesday at the Pentagon. Kenyan authorities on Wednesday indefinitely shut down the offices of 13 money transfer companies in the country after the government suspended their licenses for allegedly supporting al-Shabaab. Anthony Wachira is the chief executive officer of the Association of Money Transfer Companies in Kenya. He says the companies will go to court to force the government to reverse its decision.
I was a bit taken aback. In fact, that is one of the key things that I have noted and also really highlighted in the press statement, that it is not good at all for the people or entities who have been authorized and have been operating within a regulated environment through the regulator to be put together, to be grouped together with entities who are known to be either actual people who work with terrorists, al-Shabaab or ISIS or Boko Haram or whatever it is, with, even if they are not working with them, they are perpetrators of that. I felt very bad that means that I'm also being considered to be one of the perpetrators of the same thing.
And, of course, on top of the list, it says entities suspected to be associated with al-Shabaab. How would you respond to that accusation or to that remark?
It's a very wild allegation, and actually one would actually term it as defamation because I don't think there has been enough investigation to go around it. If whatever intelligence they use, they may not have looked at it because some of these people have been operating for a long time. They have all the documentation done, everything, all the returns they've filed with the particular entities in the country, both the tax entity and also the regulatory entity. So in terms of all the transactions they can easily look at it and say they are not being used at any time in any way that we mention that they may be related in any way to Al-Shabaab.
If I may ask you, how are you going to challenge this? Are you going to seek court injunction to start with?
We do intend to see whether FAST can raise an injunction, court injunction, so that we can see the possibility of operating. They can even come and investigate as we are operating. In any case, this really not only affects us as operators, it affects our client, affects the entire economy of the country. So it is necessary that we need to have it back, at least with an injunction, if the government is not able to take it up.
Anthony Wachira is the chief executive officer of the Association of Money Transfer Companies in Kenya. He spoke with Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 9th, and Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Rwanda says it wants to know how the French government will go about releasing declassified documents relating to the 1994 genocide that killed about 800,000 people, mostly minority Tutsis. The French news agency reports that a decision to declassify the papers was signed on Tuesday and that the documents relating to Rwanda between 1990 and 1995 are included. Rwanda's Attorney General Businge Johnston said his government will subject the declassified documents to a thorough analysis after they are made public.
Well, it's a late stage, but for us, I think the most important thing is, as we indicated earlier, is the two questions of the how and the what. How have they been declassified and what has been declassified? So in our humble view, I think we prefer to wait and see what documents are declassified and how they have been declassified. We will obviously subject them to a bit of analysis, and then we should have some comments to make at the end of the day. I also believe that institutions like French justice also has some use for them in the pursuit of Rwanda and French individuals and institutions suspected of masterminding, financing, and actually participating in the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi.
Your government has in the past said that some in the French government had a role to play in the 1994 genocide. Will the government comment based on the declassification, and if you subject it to thorough analysis, will your government have a response to this?
We have always said this between from around 1993-94. We have always said that there are people who should be investigated for their role in the genocide, and there is sizable evidence in documentation, in pictures, in agreements, and different things that we have. But it was not based on declassification of these documents. We were not advised when they would be declassified. We just hope that the declassification will add to the stock of evidence that is available and help in the pursuit of justice.
Well, Mr. Johnston, it's not clear whether the declassification will be wholesale or in phases. Have you heard about any possible procedure by which the French government will release this dossier or, you know, make it public?
No, we have not. We have asked our diplomatic representatives in Paris to find out, but we do not have any official communication on the question of how the declassification will happen. What we read in the media is that it will be in phases or in portions, but what kind of portions, where do they come from, what period do they cover? We do not have any information as of now.
Businge Johnston is Rwanda's Attorney General. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kigali. Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and President Jacob Zuma of South Africa on Wednesday signed bilateral agreements, including cooperation on water resources management. This comes as Zimbabwe faces an economic downturn worsened by an indigenization law that compels foreign-owned companies to transfer equity of up to 50% to local people. Critics say Mr. Mugabe went to South Africa almost 21 years after his last state visit to beg for money. But Zimbabwe government spokesman George Charamba says such speculation is not true.
We must understand that it's a state visit that Zimbabwe needs more than South Africa. If you look at the deliberation that has been going on during the course of the day, it's very clear that President Mugabe, with his delegation, they came here on a mission to beg for resources to South Africa.
But do you think South Africans have an appetite to assist Zimbabwe and also to invest in Harare?
Well, I think South Africa is very much interested in investing in Zimbabwe. But there are some issues that probably I think that they were part of the discussion. They are worried much about the succession of President Robert Mugabe. If not carefully handled, there's a likelihood that ZANU-PF in Zimbabwe is going to implode. So after analyzing the various trips that President Mugabe has made previously, he went to China, he went to Russia, all we heard that there were a memorandum of understanding that were signed, but nothing tangible is yet to come. So I think the only thing that is going to make sure that we are assisted is when President Mugabe has finally come clear with his succession that any other country will be willing to deal with Zimbabwe concretely.
That was Zimbabwe government spokesman George Charamba speaking with Blessing Zulu of VOS Zimbabwe service. A graphic video showing a white police officer gunning down a fleeing unarmed black man has again cast a bright spotlight on the issue of police violence against members of minority communities in the United States. The killing of Walter Scott in the city of North Charleston in the southern U.S. state of South Carolina comes after similar incidents in Ferguson, Missouri, and elsewhere in recent months. As viewers Cindy Singh reports, the Obama White House has reacted to the latest tragedy.
Everyone who has seen the video says it is difficult to watch. After the video emerged, the police officer, Michael Slager, was charged with murder and fired. At a news conference in North Charleston, Mayor Keith Summey tried to assure angry residents the city will try to do what is right.
Today, I made an executive decision and have notified my council. We have already ordered this morning an additional 150 body cameras, so that every officer that's on the street in uniform will have a body camera.
This is what democracy looks like.
Residents of the mainly black community are demanding justice, saying the whole law enforcement culture needs to be changed. Protester Mujahideen Dabaha led the protest.
He was murdered. He was murdered by state violence.
Scott family attorney Chris Stewart says there was a brief moment of relief and joy when the video was given to them that there might be a path to justice.
What if there was no video? What if there was no witness or hero, as I call him, to come forward?
Thank you, Lord.
Then this wouldn't have happened, because as you can see, the initial reports stated something totally different.
Reaction also came from the White House. Spokesman Josh Earnest said the video has made a difference.
I do think that is an example of how body cameras worn by police officers could have a positive impact in terms of building trust between law enforcement officers and the communities that they serve.
Reacting to nationwide protests over other police shootings, President Barack Obama in December created a task force on 21st century policing to come up with specific recommendations to reduce violence and build trust between communities and their law enforcement officers. Cindy Sane, VOA News, the White House.
And now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. The Confederation of African Football Executive Committee voted Gabon as hosts of the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Cairo, Egypt, on Wednesday. Gabon got the nod ahead of Algeria and Ghana. The Gabon Football Federation President Pierre Alain Munguengui told the media in Cairo that CAF's decision to select Gabon is a huge vote of confidence in the country that co-hosted the event in 2012 with Equatorial Guinea. He assures that they'll do everything possible to ensure the Nations Cup is a success. Meanwhile, Gabon is in Group I with African champions Ivory Coast, Sudan and Sierra Leone for the 2017 Nations Cup qualifiers, according to the draws conducted in Cairo on Wednesday. Following an earlier decision by the CAF Executive Committee, Nations Cup hosts Gabon will play in their qualifiers without their result affecting the group standing. Staying in Cairo, Tunisia is seeded in Group A, which also includes Togo, Liberia and Djibouti for the 2017 Nations Cup. According to the draws, Democratic Republic of Congo, Angola, Central African Republic and Madagascar are in Group B. Group C consists of Mali, Equatorial Guinea, Benin and South Sudan. Group D features Burkina Faso, Uganda, Botswana and the Comoro Islands. Meanwhile, Zambia, Republic of Congo, Kenya and Guinea are in Group E. Cape Verde Islands are in Group F, which also includes Morocco, Libya, and Sao Tome. Group G features Nigeria, Egypt, Tanzania, and Chad. Group H includes Ghana, Mozambique, Rwanda, and Mauritius. Algeria, Ethiopia, Lesotho, and Seychelles are in Group J. Group K consists of Senegal, Niger, Namibia, and Burundi. Guinea, Malawi, Zimbabwe, and Swaziland are in Group L, while Group M features Cameroon, South Africa, Gambia, and Mauritania. Finally, in golf, the Barclays Kenya Open Golf Tournament tees off in the capital, Nairobi, today, Thursday. 27 professionals and 6 amateur Kenyan golfers are vying against 156 mostly professional golfers from across the world for the coveted trophy. No Kenyan has won the 4-day annual event since 1994. South Africa's Jake Ross is the defending champion. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Monk. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Thursday morning, April 9th.
I wish to call on the international community to come to the rescue of African countries. The terrorists are trying to destroy the whole of Africa. People like Boko Haram, Al-Shabaab, Al-Qaeda, name them. Please, international community, come now before Africa continue ravaged by so-called insurgents. Please come now. Comrade Mazi Patrick Okorocrafo, Abia State, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A former prisoner of the U.S. prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, has been arrested in Uganda on suspicion of playing a role in the killing last month of a prosecutor who handled terror cases. Jamal Kiyamba, a Ugandan, was arrested along with 3 others in the capital, Kampala. Ugandan police spokesman Fred Inanga said on Wednesday, officials say U.S. government personnel supported the operation that led to Kiyamba's arrest. That is it for this Thursday, April 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producers David Vandy and Nicole Beckford, reporter Peter Clarty and Ricky Schreier, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want, Download our podcast. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Tune in to VOA programs on your radio and on the internet. We bring you news about Africa and the world 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. News, talk shows, sports, music, everything you want to hear. Available on the radio and the web on The Voice of America. Find the VOA program guide at www.voanews.com and check local listings for stations near you that carry VOA programming.